Welcome to the Milestone Mama Podcast. I'm your host, Chelsea Hollis, wife, boy mom, and former fitness instructor turned photographer, educator, and birth doula. Becoming a mom in 2020 completely changed my life. And even though it was the greatest joy I've ever felt, it definitely came with some challenges that no one could have ever prepared me for. But I found so much healing and community, and that's why this podcast was born. Tune in each week as we uncover all of the nuances of being a mom, from pregnancy, birth, postpartum, and everything in between. If you're ready to connect, to grow, to learn, to feel inspired, seen, and heard, then you've come to the right place. And I'm so glad you're here, Mama. Let's go ahead and get this thing started. Hi, welcome back to the Milestone Mama Podcast. I'm so excited that you're here for another birth story today. We are going to hear from Laura Wilson, who is going to be sharing her home birth story. She gave birth to her baby boy, Wilder, in January of 2021. She had a really positive experience with this home birth under a midwife care. I love that Laura also shares a lot of the detail of her pregnancy from first trimester all the way through those late days of her pregnancy and the different things that she did to help keep her body in check and feeling good and well. And so today's episode goes a little bit more into detail from beginning to end, which is kind of fun. And I'll just let her go ahead and tell the rest of the story from here.
Okay, everybody. I am here with Laura Wilson, and she is here to share her unique birth story today. I'm so excited to hear from her. I have not heard this story yet, so I'll be listening organically along with you guys. And Laura, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Of course. I'm just going to let you take the floor with telling your story. But first, can you just give us a little bit about who you are and a little bit about your family?
Sure. So Laura Wilson here. I am a new mom to baby Wilder, who at the time of recording this, he is a week away from being 5 months. I'm in North Carolina, and I am a health coach and yoga instructor here. Married, dog mom as well, and love living at the beach and just kind of helping, you know, other people feel good about themselves. So
that's wonderful. And I love his name too. That's so cute.
Thank you.
Do you have any nicknames for him?
Well, at first he was Little Meatball. And then, so it changes. Yeah. Now that he is more proportionate, he's not quite a little meatball anymore.
Yeah.
My husband sometimes will call him Wiley, which is also like a real name. So, but mostly Babe and Wilder. Yeah.
I love it. I always love asking that question because it's so funny. I feel like it's the same way with dogs. Like, and babies, they're named one thing, and then the things that you end up calling them are just so out there, but it's just what sticks. We call Silas like Bubby, Bubba, Sci-Sci, all sorts of names, Pumpkin. So
yeah, I guess we do have like a list of kind of anything just that comes out the mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything cute. Yeah. Little milk monster.
this is true. All right, well, let's just go ahead and jump right into your birth story. You can start at wherever you feel like the story truly begins, and we'll just go from there.
Okay, great. So I had a home birth, an all natural home birth, and it's interesting. It wasn't something I was always knowing I was going to do. I lived in California for a really long time before living here, and they had a birth center, and that's kind of where all my friends were doing it, and it seemed like a really nice place. It was close to the hospital, but not the hospital. And then here where I live, I don't really think there's not a birth center in the area. And so once it came time to be like, okay, this is time to get pregnant. Then I started doing the research of like midwives, and I found, midwifery services for Eastern, Southeast North Carolina for home births. And I just kind of started getting more educated, and I called her just to talk to her, and I talked to my husband about it. And I knew pretty instantaneously that it was the path I wanted to take. And then my husband can be a little more, you know, sometimes more traditional than me. I'm very more holistic and natural in a lot of ways. And so we together watched The Business of Being Born, and that documentary is so powerful. He couldn't even get through it for two reasons. One, because it was a lot of birth footage, but two, he made up his mind. I did make him watch the whole thing, but yeah, we had to take like two pauses.
We watched that too. And, yeah. My husband, I'm pretty sure, fell asleep during it, but
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it is a really interesting documentary. And it's timely that you're on, because at the time that we're recording this week, we dropped an episode all about home birth in general and kind of the misconceptions about it and what it might look like. And so by the time this episode actually airs, that might have been a while back. But if you're interested, you can always go back and listen to that episode with Lauren Jolly when it comes to like the decision-making process of it. She's certainly not trying to convince or push anyone on it. She's just kind of sharing her perspective of why she decided to choose one for herself. And it was really eye-opening. I thought there was some stuff in there that I hadn't even known about either. I thought it wasn't legal here for a long time, because that's kind of what I was told. Mm-hmm. But obviously that's not the case. So
yeah, it is. I listened to that episode already too, and it's a good one. Definitely. Yeah. So, I think no matter what kind of birth you have, I think it's important to just, you know, like for me, what really helped was hearing birth stories. And for me, it wasn't even just home birth stories, just birth stories in general, just really, really helped me. Mm-hmm. It's empowering. And, I didn't really have any friends that were pregnant alongside me. Or a lot of people, I kind of like, I'm in this weird, like either my friends had kids 5 years ago or they're not quite there. So I don't have that many to connect with. Mm-hmm. So healthy pregnancy. I'm also plant-based. And so I know a lot of people, I actually was surprised. I didn't have a lot of people being like, you can't be pregnant and plant-based. I thought I was going to get a lot of that, but I did get a lot of questions about it. And since I am like a health coach, I did my research on that as well, made sure I was taking the right supplements. You know, like omegas are really important, vitamin D, whether or not you're trying to get pregnant or pregnant, vitamin D is pretty important for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. To be a common one we're all deficient in, but B12 and folate, you know, making sure I had a really good prenatal, getting in enough protein. So I was eating, I mean, my midwife recommended like 70 to 100 grams of protein. And so a lot of beans and like non-dairy Greek yogurt and things like that really helped me get in more protein and smoothies.
What was that like in the first trimester? Like, did you have aversion? Because I pretty much lived off of bagels and mac and cheese in my first trimester, because it was like the only thing that I didn't want to throw up at. So I'm curious what you did in terms of being plant-based in that time frame.
Yeah. So a lot of my favorite foods I had aversions to for a good like month or two, hummus, avocado, and kale. Just like the thought of, you know, just the thought of it. The day I could have avocado again, and avocado toast was so lovely. I craved really salty stuff. And so I wasn't really a huge chip eater until first trimester came along, and those Cape Cod chips. Oh man.
Oh, they're so good.
So I was craving like mustard and pickles and salt. And so I did a lot of like kimchi on my foods, and things like that. And thankfully I was still able to get smoothies in, but just not as much of the greens. And so I relied on the protein powder, and the Greek yogurt. And I loved, cause like getting protein in all day long is what really helped me with my, you know, sickness that really just felt like a 24/7 hangover.
Right.
So I would snack on those like chickpea, like those dried chickpea snacks, which are really, they covered like the protein and the salt, and the carb, all that. But it was hard.
Those days it's so nice when you come out on the other side of that and you're like, oh my gosh, I can feel normal. And not like, I remember one day I literally cried on my bed because I was so hungry and I was searching all the menus for lunch in the area and I could not find anything that sounded good. And I was like so upset and so hungry. And eventually I was like, all right, I'm just going to get in my car and drive somewhere and I'll figure it out. But like, I have to eat something because I am wilting away over here.
Yeah.
And now I just laugh at how funny that was and how hormonal you are and like how crazy that time frame can feel. So
yeah and I, you know, I'm a big advocate of like batch cooking to save time, and there are multiple times where I would like do my normal batch cook and I'd have it once and then be like, I can't eat this giant pot of chili I just made.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, and then I realized I needed to stop doing that.
Yeah, at least for a little while.
Mm-hmm. And then like towards the end, I had a lot of heartburn, which, you know, they say, oh, if you're like, maybe they have a lot of hair. And like, so I've heard that little tale. And he did actually get born with a decent amount of hair. So I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
But I would wake up towards the end. It was awful because even when he dropped, he's long, he was 21 and a half inches.
Wow.
And so he never, like, I was constantly getting kicked in the ribs. It never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And then the heartburn, I would like wake up in the middle of the night at the very end, like having to sit up and just, ugh.
Yeah. The heartburn was awful. I had it so bad too that a few times I actually threw up from it because it would just like come up so fast, like, and I'd have to get up out of bed. And the only thing that helped, I don't know if you ever tried this, but one of my OBs was like, I know this is going to sound really weird and counterintuitive, but take a shot of apple cider vinegar before you go to bed, because like something about the acidity of it kind of counteracts the heartburn. And it was so gross, but I would dilute it in a little shot glass, take a cap full of the vinegar and do that. And it didn't make it go away completely, but it definitely helped me to like sleep through the night without having to get up. And anyway, so little side tip, if you're listening in your second or third trimester and you're dealing with that right now, because it's not fun.
Yeah. I also heard something about drinking baking soda. I didn't try that though either.
Yeah, I didn't either. That doesn't sound very yummy.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so how did the remainder of your pregnancy go, like your third trimester moving into when you went into labor?
It went pretty well. I definitely noticed the last few weeks really slowing down, and even like on social media and just in general, just like feeling the urge to be a little more quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was winter. So he was born on January 25th of this year, 2021. So I tried to get little walks out. You know, it's important to keep walking. And so I tried to keep up with daily movement. I relied heavily on weekly chiropractic work. My pelvic area, I was super misaligned, and I actually was really, there were like 2 weeks where I was in a lot of pain. And mostly going from sitting to standing was really, really painful, just that motion. And so I went to this really amazing prenatal chiropractor, and I saw her weekly, and it was really neat because she was pregnant too, seeing the same midwife.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome.
Yeah. She was 2 months behind me. But she was getting on that table still with her belly. It was pretty awesome.
It's so strange. I feel like that's something. And so I'm glad you're highlighting this, because I feel like that in the end of pregnancy, you don't really ever hear about it. Like the pelvic floor pain. I never saw a chiropractor. I probably should have, but I remember feeling like I could just feel my pelvic floor super sore, as if it was being stretched from both ends, kind of. And the best way that I can describe it, if no one has felt this who's listening, is like if you do like a thigh master or like some like inner thigh groin type of workout really hard, and then you wake up the next day and it's really sore there. It's kind of what it feels like, but like in your pelvic floor. Is that kind of how you felt? It was like almost like a tight stretching sensation.
Yeah, I had some of that for sure. It was almost like my sacrum, like my actual like tailbone area, that was the most painful. Mm. And supposedly it shifted because you're getting that more of that hormone relaxin, which is a very appropriate name because it's all relaxing down there to. And so I think my tailbone shifted to the left. And so that was what was causing a lot of that pain. And so I think I went to 4 or 5 visits. But it was an hour drive for me because of where, you know, where I live and where she lives or her office. And so I couldn't go more than once a week, and doing it more than a month would have been hard, but yeah, worth it. I'd never heard of it until I was like in that moment and my midwife recommended it. And I'd never heard of round ligament pain. Mm. And even the research I did on it was like, oh, you need to sit down because you're too busy, or you get it from sitting and standing. I had it all the time. And like I said, I walked a lot. I would walk every day, and I would have it almost my entire walk. And so the chiropractor, she would just stick her thumbs into like that area and massage it. And oh my gosh, it was so relieving. So for anybody who's dealing with that, I tried like wearing those like little braces that use those belly braces. And I think my chiropractor said not to do those because like you're still meant to carry your baby. And I think that can put more, I don't know, I forget why, but she said she didn't recommend wearing those belly braces. So
I never tried it. I don't have any experience whether or not it like helps or not, but I don't think I had the round ligament pain, but I feel like there's all sorts of things that happen, especially towards the end, that you're just like, wait, what, what is this? This is not anything I've ever felt before. So
yeah,
I'm glad that you're touching on all of these things, because a lot of our birth stories, we kind of just go right into labor and not like the weeks leading up to it, because I think those last several weeks, regardless of when you end up going into labor, they feel so long, and they're very anxiety ridden. You don't know when you're going to have the baby. All these things are starting to change. You're starting to get really uncomfortable. Everyone's asking you how you feel. Everyone's asking you if you've had the baby yet. And it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. So.
Yeah. And I remember feeling like years ago when one of my friends was going through it, I remember her getting to the end and being like so ready to be done being pregnant. And I had this thought, and now I feel bad because I didn't understand. I was like, how could you, you know, like, I think it's so cool to be pregnant the whole time, but man, it's okay to like not be happy with it at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember like after giving birth, I was like, oh, I'm not pregnant anymore. Like, this is such a great feeling. But then it's crazy how quickly you kind of miss it a little bit. Like you're just so used to that. You have 9 months of the wonder and the feeling them and all of that. And then all of a sudden you don't have control anymore over that being, you know, in your uterus.
Yeah.
And I remember having certain days where I would just have a like super, super rough day. And I'd be like, man, if I could just take a little break, put him back in there for like a few hours, just so I could get some sleep, that would be so great. And then I would feel guilty for even thinking that. And that's a whole nother tangent, but
yeah.
Anyway.
I'm glad you said the word control, because I have like a controlling personality sometimes. And that was like one of my biggest lessons during like pregnancy. And now even as a mom is like trying to release control. And like that really helped me. Like I even knew going into birth, I would tell myself like, okay, you know, you can't control it. Whatever happens, you know, it's going to happen the way it's supposed to. He's going to come the way he's ready and how. And so trying to like release some of that control in advance, it takes a lot of work. But
there's a lot of surrender that needs to happen in motherhood, but it, especially in the birth process, it's very, very mental. So let's move into that part. I'm excited to hear your story.
Yeah. So, I think the chiropractic work might've helped with my quick labor. You know, for first time moms, everything I read is it's likely to go anywhere from like 12 to 30 plus hours of labor. Basically from the first contraction on, I only labored for 7.5 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I went for like a Sunday walk and I was telling my husband, I was like, I got to keep up with these walks because they say they can help you go into labor. I literally get back, I pull out my yoga mat and I try to just do some like lunges just to stretch while we're waiting for dinner. And I also read a lot that like, even though people are always like, oh, your water is going to break, blah, blah, blah. Like everyone I talked to never really had their water break. So I was expecting my water to not break. And I go into lunge and in 2 seconds, whoop, my water broke.
Wow. And how far along were you at this point?
Yeah. So I was 39 weeks and 4 days.
Okay.
And so you also hear, you go beyond 40 weeks as a first time mom. Right. He was measuring. So his head was measuring 2 weeks ahead. So like part of him was measuring 2 weeks ahead anyway. So I was like, okay, you know, he could come close to the due date. Mm-hmm. And so, but also not, because he could just end up being a really big baby. So he was, well, I'll get there. But so my water broke at around 7 o'clock at night, and I called my midwife. And I had this litmus paper for doing a home birth so I could test the water. And so it actually broke like again a little bit later. I tried to do like more lunges and it broke some more. And then they say, since I wasn't getting cervical checks, I wasn't like worried like, oh, I have to like have my baby in this certain little time frame. Because you have the option to not get checked. I think even if you're at the hospital, I don't know, but I think you can still, but so she was like, okay, well have a nice meal and then go to bed. And I don't know who in their right mind can just go to bed after their water breaks. I mean, hello, you're about to like push out a human. Mm-hmm.
Not to mention once your water's broken, I mean, not necessarily for every single labor, but that means there's going to be way more pressure pushing down, and therefore things are going to happen probably quicker than you think. So I cannot imagine going to bed with my water being broken.
Yeah, I know. And it makes me wonder, like, I didn't have like a ton of Braxton Hicks, but that whole weekend off and on I did. Mm-hmm. But you still hear that could happen for weeks. Right. So for me, I didn't really think it was going to be soon. And so 7 o'clock water broke, and then we end up having a late dinner. I go to bed. I try to just like watch a show in my bed at like 9 something. I think I maybe got 30 minutes of sleep. And then at 10:30, I'm awoken with the contractions. And I call my midwife and she's like, okay, well, you know, when you get to the point where you can't talk to me as calmly as you are, call me back. And I was like, okay. 2 hours later, 12:30, I call her back and I'm, you know, I feel, because I'm laying down, I feel like I need to push my feet up against something. Like, I'm just like, I can't be in the bed. And so I get off the bed and I kneel against the bed and I call her and I'm like, I'm already feeling like pushing. Like, I'm already feeling pressure. And she was like, oh, okay. She was like, can you get into a bathtub? So my plan was to have the birth in a birth pool. And so she's like, I'll call Josie, the assistant, and we'll be on our way. They're an hour away. So there's a lot of trust, you know, that goes into this. And I'm like, it's, you also know that like, usually you have the time, especially for your first birth. So yeah. I get into the bathtub and then my husband goes and fills up the birth pool. I think he goes to blow it up in the living room. And then I'm in the bath for half an hour or so, and it felt really good, but then I was over it. And then I finished laboring around the house or just walking around the house. I had these like birth affirmations that I wanted to like put up on the wall and all this stuff that I just like, I was like, I'm not even going there. I saw them. I can think about them if I want to. Yeah. It's funny what you like don't, what like you think you're going to do. And then when the time comes, it's like what really matters.
Yeah. Yeah. You just kind of enter like, it feels like you're in another state of consciousness almost, mm-hmm. which is that it really baffles me when I hear stories like yours, when women say like, oh yeah, my doctor, my midwife said to call back when I can't talk through contractions. And I'm like, well, then how the heck did you call them? Like, I mean, I was induced in a hospital. So once I was at that point, like, I was just like in that labor land, like I didn't have to make any phone calls. So the thought of doing that, I'm like, how did you even have the wherewithal? That's so wild to me.
Yeah. Well, and same thing as like getting in the car to go to a hospital.
Yeah.
Like, especially I live on a second floor. Like I'd have to go downstairs and I don't know how anyone does that.
Yeah, I don't either. That's what makes me nervous for next time around. But
yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I just had to say that I'm really like, wow, that just, you got to be really strong to still be that, I guess, aware mm-hmm. when I know how intense that those moments can be.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, the intensity just built so quickly. After my midwives arrived and they like checked my vital signs and stuff. I think being a first time mom, they were still like thinking they had a lot of time. So my midwife actually went and took a nap in our spare room. And I was like, hey, it's 2 a.m. Sure. That's fine. My vital signs were checked like every 30 minutes and the babies, and it really hurt when they would check the baby's heart rate, like just putting the stethoscope on my belly would trigger the contractions.
Wow.
And so it was coming so quickly. And I finally got to the point where I wanted to get checked. And by that time I happened to be 7 centimeters. And so they told me to go ahead and get into the birth pool. And it was just so nice laboring around the house, like having my husband, it was just my husband and then the midwife and her assistant. And the water felt amazing. It was like immediate relief. And it, like I said, it was going so fast that, I'll get there in a second, but then like the breathing, like it was so primal and they kept having to tell me to go like lower in my voice. Mm-hmm. And so that was a challenge. And then it was coming so quickly that when she said it was time to push, I was like, I've only been in the water for like a half an hour. And I'm like, how do you, I guess she knew based on how I was reacting and whatever.
And the sounds that you were probably making and
yeah.
The transition was really fast for you then.
It was so fast. And I remember being afraid to push because I was like, well, I don't want to tear because I heard like, if you push too soon, mm-hmm. and that was like on my mind all throughout pregnancy, it was like, I don't want to tear. So I did all the like perennial massages, all the things to try to not tear. And so I was like, oh, I don't want to push yet. But I also got to this point where I didn't want to push because I was like, I don't want to go any further. You know, you get to that point where it's like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to keep doing this. Can I go home now?
Yeah.
But then you're like, oh, but the only way out is through.
Yep.
And so the birth pool wasn't working. I, being on my side, the different positions, I just couldn't figure out bearing down and I wasn't progressing enough. And so she was like, you know what, we need to get you out to let gravity help. Mm-hmm. So after one more try, they get me out, which was very hard to physically get out and do. But gravity is what did it for me. I was standing and like hugging my husband, who's 6 foot. So I'm like 5'7". He's 6 foot. So I'm hugging like my like slow dance position. And there were times where I just had to like lift my feet completely off the floor and he held me. And that still didn't do it. So they propped my foot up on the birth pool and that did it. They just really needed to help widen my hips. And so I only pushed for 30 minutes but it was very intense. And then coming back to like the tearing thing, this was really unavoidable as the cord was wrapped around his neck. And so a lot of people worry about like those types of issues happening, especially being at home. Like those are some fears people have and it's common.
Right.
But my midwife, certified nurse midwife, she's a pro. I mean, she's been doing it for a really long time and we didn't even know it happened until like the next day, but she jumped right in and, I mean, it was fine. Like she wrapped it, unwrapped it or whatever, but that caused me to tear her, like intervening to get him quickly and get the cord quickly. And then, yeah, and then it was just like a big shock of like, holy moly, like this just happened. And yeah. And so.
So were you were still upright when he actually came all the way out?
Mm-hmm.
Did you reach down and grab him?
Oh, that's right. I remember feeling his head and I thought that was so weird.
Yeah.
But then I think because of the cord, she did tell me to do that to help pushing. And that is very motivating when you're like, the head's right there. That really helps. But I don't think I caught him. I think she did because of the cord.
Yeah.
And she did. And then she had me sit down. And then my husband came and sat behind me to prop me up. And then she like passed him through, basically.
Mm. That is so cool.
Yeah.
It's interesting too. I always hear of like the people that I do know that have had home births, they always want to do it in the pool and it just never ends up happening that way. I see a lot of them I follow a lot of like Instagram accounts that just have like really beautiful home birth videos and water births. And I'm always like, wow, I'm just like so in awe of these women, just like they're like hardly even making any sounds. And then they just like push their baby out. And then I read the caption and it's like, so-and-so delivers her fifth baby. And I'm like, oh, okay. that makes sense.
Yes, I was actually going to bring that exact point up because that's what helped me. I was like, oh, it's going to be blissful and beautiful. And mm-hmm. Oh, I meditate and do yoga. I can do this quietly and I can totally tap into my head and, or out of my head or whatever. And I was so loud that my throat was hurting the next day.
Yes. Yeah. Same. Mm-hmm. And I remember apologizing. I was like, oh my gosh, I was so loud. Because I was in a hospital and I was like, the women next door are probably terrified now. And they're like, it's fine. You're fine. But it's so, like you said, it's so primal. Like that's the perfect way to describe it. It's crazy what your body just does. And like, it's so like instinctual to use that to
mm-hmm.
get your baby out. And I remember the nurse, I was like starting to push and I was like being really loud during the push. And the nurse was like, you're going to be a lot more productive if you just use what you're using, like that energy you're using to scream, if you just push down instead.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah. And it was true. It really did help.
Yeah.
We found that too.
I was told that multiple times.
It's hard. Yeah, for sure. Well, that is awesome. So he was, you said he was 21 and a half inches long. How much did he weigh?
8.5 pounds.
Okay. So he was a decent size.
Yeah. I was really huge when I got towards the end. So I was worried that he was going to be bigger. And, and like my husband was born with really broad shoulders and had to like, he was like almost pushed out and then had to do like an emergency C-section for him. So the whole time, you know, I had family members being like, oh, well, if they're like, oh, like you're going to have a big baby. And that's not very helpful to hear. And so I had to just like tune that out.
That's a really good point to bring out too. I feel like that's so many women's fear. I felt the same way too, because I was a big baby. I was 9 pounds. I was a section, however, a planned section, because my mom had already had a previous one. But my husband was born, I think he was like 5 or 6 weeks premature. But at that point, he was still like a decent size for a preemie. And I was like, oh man, my baby's going to be so big. And honestly, like, it just plants the seeds of like limiting belief, and which in turn can affect your labor. Like I'm as someone who's experienced birth in that way, and someone who meditates and teaches yoga, like I'm sure you fully understand the power of like the mind body connection. And so even when midwives and doctors are like telling their moms that they're going to have these huge babies or babies measuring huge, a lot of times like that margin of error is pretty big. I have multiple friends recently that gave birth that they were being told their baby was measuring so big, and they ended up both being under 7 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just like, I understand like that it can pose issues if that actually is the case, but I feel like most times it isn't. And then all it does is scare women into thinking they're not capable of doing it. And most of the time you are, unless other issues arise. Like your body is made, the baby's head is made to be, you know, its skull is not fully, what's the word? Like put together.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's malleable to come out of your vagina in that way. And sometimes tearing happens, and it's inevitable, and it's meant to heal as well. And so I don't know. I think it's just such a scary, terrible thing that gets talked about all the time. And yeah, it definitely can be, there can be some worst cases of it, but for the most part, our bodies were designed to do it. We're also designed to heal from it. So, yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, and that's such a cool story. It sounds like you're super mom pushing out an 8.5 pound baby at home.
In like the Captain Morgan position.
Yes. Yeah. That's so, did they have you prop your left leg up?
My right leg, which was the problem side all during pregnancy, which is funny.
Interesting.
And
I guess they usually roll you onto your left side. So your right leg would be propped up. Like that's the typical.
Oh, okay. Is
that if you're laying down, they usually roll you onto your left side. So that would make sense.
Okay. Yeah. I thought I was going to be like hands and knees or in the water. I don't even think I got on my hands and knees. So
yeah,
you know,
and that the strength that takes though is pretty crazy. That's great that your labor was not very long, because I'm sure you were able to like sustain that physical energy to do that. I thought that too. I was like, oh, well, I'm probably gonna birth on my hands and knees or like squatting or something. But then by the time I got there, I was like shaking. My muscles were just shaking from being so tired that I just like had to do it on my back, because I couldn't even hold myself up. I was like, hold my legs up. What?
That's
insane. So yeah, I always love hearing about other people's experiences in that way. It's so cool. And how was your recovery and postpartum and all that?
Recovery was another thing about like, I had this like vision of it being super like blissful, because I tore my labia tore. So that took, honestly, it really wasn't until like 8 weeks. And like that really, like that spot sucks because you moving all the time, you know, like, so like I really envisioned being a little bit more active, but that was that whole control thing. And I let it go and I was like, you know what? It's fine. I'm just, it's not important. It's, I just need to heal. I definitely like sleep was a struggle for me. I'm not someone who can nap. And I even purposefully avoided caffeine for weeks and still couldn't nap. It was hard. And so, my first 2 weeks, my husband didn't work. And so he was able to like, kind of just like make my meals for me. We don't have any family in town. So we, a lot of family members, it was so great, especially with COVID. I think it is something people didn't really think that they could do until COVID, but buying people takeout and like they would order it and my husband would just go pick it up. And like ordering groceries for us, like was such a huge help. Mm-hmm. I will say, I didn't have postpartum depression, but I did have some anxiety, and my anxiety, I did take placenta pills. So I think that helped with the postpartum depression or like lack of it. Mm-hmm. But my anxiety was definitely like boundaries related. So, my in-laws were here and, they decided to rent a house 5 blocks away from us for 5 months. So, and we haven't lived near family since in like 15 years. So we've been very independent for 15 years. And so to have my in-laws around, was stressful, and, you know, they meant well. I appreciate their love for us and Wilder and all of that. But, having them wanting to come over all the time and just sit and talk is not what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't comfortable telling them no. And especially for how generous they were being towards us, it's like, how do you tell somebody no? Right. And I really envisioned a lot of like, I like my alone time, and I envisioned a lot of like baby walks with just me. And I think I only got one movie in the whole maternity leave. Like I imagined like cuddling on the couch, watching movies and just doing these like sweet things. But instead, like, you know, my mother-in-law came over like 4 days out of the week and wanted to sit and talk. Wow. So that was really hard, and it gave me anxiety. And even if I was like, well, I'll use this time to go lay down or meditate, because I wasn't meditating, well, like that wasn't like a good environment for me to even want to meditate in. Right. So that was hard. That was definitely a struggle.
Yeah. And that's such a tough spot too, because it's like, it's not your own mother, right? It's like you love them and care about them, but like with your own mother, you could easily feel, I mean, at least I can with my mom. Like if I need a boundary, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to tell her. But it is different with your in-laws, because you don't want to like hurt anybody's feelings, and mm-hmm. you want them to know how much they're appreciated and you know they mean well. And then there's like this guilt that you feel for like not being appreciative, but really you just need those, you still have your needs and your boundaries. And like, that's really important too. So
yeah, like I had days where my husband was at work and she just walked in the house and uninvited or unannounced. And those were only a few before we finally set like a boundary about that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a little too much. Yeah. And yeah. And so, and like you said, like I feel bad. And like my family came, my mom's sister and niece all came and stayed with us for a week, but that was when I was like 5 weeks mm-hmm. postpartum. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of worked out anyway, better for their schedule to have more time. So that's why they waited that long. But like, I didn't need help around the house. Like I actually had tons of freezer meals. And with people buying us groceries and takeout, like I didn't need help. And so, so that's hard, because there's like that balance of like needing it or just accepting it anyway. Mm-hmm. or you, in my case, have somebody who maybe she didn't know how to help, but she just wanted to kind of like sit and cuddle with the baby and hang out. And so not clean, not do. So if you are going to have somebody come, maybe set that boundary in advance. Be like, if you plan to come, here's a list of things. And like, I didn't feel comfortable saying that to her, but maybe whoever's listening, if you have people that you can say that to, but like some sort of like helping out list.
Yeah. Our doulas gave us this really cool, like little notebook thing. It was like a postpartum packet that they put together, and they had all these lists and kind of graphs in there of like, if people come over, what are some things you need help with? Like, if you have a dog, what's their routine, or what's the routine for your, if you have other small children around, and who can help with what duties? And it was really cool. I don't know that we even really, I think I used it a little bit. We didn't have family here a ton, but, or at least not after the first like 2 or 3 weeks. But it was really cool, because with that, you don't necessarily have to voice it. You can just be like, oh, actually, here's this list we have. You could just make your own.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, you know, that's there. and then you don't have to actually necessarily voice it, but they could take that initiative. And you're right. It like postpartum is such a fine, there's such a fine line in the balance between accepting help and being vulnerable enough to accept the help when you need it. And then also setting the boundaries for what makes you feel the most comfortable and for your own mental and physical health as well. And that's different for everybody, but just know that it's okay to accept the help when you need it. And it's okay to set the boundary when it doesn't feel right. To anyone listening who might have friends or family that are postpartum, I think the best advice I could give is, if you are going to help, the decision fatigue for moms in that stage is like very, very real. I don't know if you felt this way, but like, I had so many people that would be like, if you need anything, let me know. And that was very genuine, I know. But then I'm not going to go down a list of people when I need something specific and ask them to do A, B, and C. Like, it's just too much to think about. But if instead someone was like, hey, like, I'm running to Target, is there anything you need? I'll swing by tonight at 7. Or like, hey, we're going to bring dinner tomorrow night, what's your order from this restaurant? And it was just so much easier to accept that kind of help, rather than like have to take that next step of going out of your way to ask someone something specific that you already feel kind of like icky asking about, you know?
Totally.
Well, this was really fun to hear your story. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing with our listeners. If anyone wants to connect with you and chat about home birth or what you do for a living or babies or any of the above, where can they connect with you?
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I can be found on Instagram, Laura_A_Wilson, and website Balanced Health with Laura. And I'd be happy to connect more. It's super helpful. It was helpful for me. So I'm open to any questions.
Awesome. And as always, I'll link that in the show notes below as well for easier access. And thank you so much, Laura. Thank you, mamas, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.